Thank you for listening to Toxic to Triumph. My name is Matthew Pfeiffer. I am your host. In today's episode, we're going to be talking with Evan, the counselor. You can't talk about trauma without talking about PTSD and CPTSD. Today, we're going to be talking about how to heal from those things. Looking forward to having this conversation with you, and I will talk to you soon. I'm excited to let all of you know that my book, Oh Shit, I Think They're a Fucking Narcissist, is now available. You can find it linked in my bio, or you can go to my website, mattpfeiffercoaching.com. The reason why I wrote this book is that I wanted to make people very clear on what narcissism looks like, what the criteria behind it looks like. Whether someone that you're a coworker with is a narcissist, whether someone you are a family member with is a narcissist, you're going to be able to tell the difference between someone who is overly confident and someone who's narcissistic. There's a very big difference. And are you going to be able to tell when you meet and when you encounter someone who is narcissistic? Looking forward to getting this into your hands. Make sure you go to my website, or you go to the link in one of my bios, whether it be Instagram, Facebook, or TikTok, or you can go to the link in the bio in the show notes of this show. Thank you all for all of your support. I'm looking forward to it. Hello, welcome to Toxic to Triumph. My name is Matthew Pfeiffer. I am your host, and I have on a very special guest. I have on Evan, the counselor. If you follow me on TikTok, I'm sure you follow him as well. Someone who I absolutely, absolutely enjoy his content. He is very, very creative with the way that he spreads his message with mental health. He is out of Minneapolis, and someone who I have a lot of respect for, not only with his content, how creative he is, but how knowledgeable he is. One of the things that I appreciate is when someone is able to take something that is so unique and so sensitive in terms of the terminology and in terms of the type of trauma that people go through, and is able to not only use it to spread a message, but make it entertaining, make it fun, all at the same time. So Evan, thank you very much for joining Toxic to Triumph. We are happy to have you on. I'm just going to toss it over to you. If you want to introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into this and how you got onto TikTok.
Sure. Well, yeah, thanks for the kind words. The feelings are mutual. You know, coming on and seeing your content pretty early on, like, wow, look at this guy. He's killing it, you know, as you are. And it's been cool to see your content and give me something to shoot for. My background, I'm from Chicago originally, moved up to Minneapolis about over 10 years ago now to finish up school. My background is a mental health professional, licensed therapist, clinical social worker, and licensed addiction counselor in Minnesota. So I have a practice, I have a group practice that I've started and that I run. I do stuff with housing for people coming out of treatment. I just love being in the field. I have a lot of different things that I've done. I guess I get bored pretty easily, which brings us to TikTok, I was telling you earlier that I was listening to a podcast one day, listening to some content. It's actually more of like a business focus, and someone mentioned TikTok. And actually, I had been casually writing this book, and you know, over the last couple of years, just chipping away at it. And I thought, hey, like, maybe that would be cool to, you know, see if I could try my hand at this, build a following, and maybe be a way to like promote my book later on. I think is what I was thinking at the time. So this was November, October, something of last year, which feels like forever ago. Like, I feel like TikTok time is like, 2 months ago, I'm like, well, my vintage work.
Right.
So that's how I got into it. And I just started doing it. And as I mentioned earlier, that it's really like scratched the creative itch that I've always had. I've always liked performing and comedy and writing, but I never had an outlet for it. It's like, I don't know, I guess part of me always knew that this is something that I should be doing, but I didn't know what it was. Like, I had no, like, what I have going on now, I would have never guessed a year ago. I wouldn't have been like, I would have been like, yeah, it makes sense, but I would have never. And I guess, you know, there's part of me too that says, hey, you know, maybe it's just this talent, passion, just that's never going to get realized, and I'll figure out some other way, and whatever. But it's, yeah, so it just kind of came about. And TikTok, it's, you know, boom or bust. And, you know, it definitely at first it wasn't expecting, you know, I'm not one of those people that like post their first video, it goes viral. And, whatever.
I think that, you know, there's people that do post one video and they go viral, but I think that's on the rare end of the spectrum, in particular when, you know, I think you kind of know, you kind of can relate to this when you first get on and you're talking about mental health, you, even though you have that creativity and you want to be edgy, all at the same time, you're like, you just want to be very sensitive and you don't want to push that envelope. And then it kind of gets to the point where you're like, you know what? I think I'm just going to go with this and I'm just going to let this loose and let my hair down and show a little bit about my passion and things. So what type of content do you actually put out?
Yeah. It's just like my life. It's like a hodgepodge of like, yeah. And I like that. I mean, I have like a lot of different interests. I get bored kind of easily. And I've experimented with a lot and I've gotten, you know, pretty good reception in like all these categories. Certainly not all my videos are, you know, not all created equal and they don't all get a grand reception. But yeah, so some of it is just straight up comedy. Like I do skits. I own wigs now. That's a thing that I never thought. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just do like straight up skits. You know, a lot of like pop culture stuff, trying to like relate mental health to pop culture references, like Harry Potter, The Office, you know, and then some of it's just like straight up nerdy education, you know, like breaking down a disorder, you know, answering people's questions, you know, putting a little music in there. Someone once told me like you'd be just like a mental health variety show. I think so. That's like kind of a good way of putting it, but
right.
Yeah, so it's a little all over the place. But the one thing is mental health and addiction. So I really try to stay. I've done a couple videos unrelated, but I think that's the one thing that I try to stay with and focus on. Is just do whatever you want, just make sure mental health and addiction is there somewhere.
One of the, you know, some of your content and some of my content definitely has some crossover, in particular when we start talking about trauma. And even though I don't really talk about addiction, I do oftentimes relate people who are going through a trauma bond or who are recovering from a toxic relationship to addiction, because there's so many parallels, in particular people who are, you know, I remember when I was in the addictions field, people who are recovering from a heroin addiction really used to struggle with the withdrawal symptoms. And so there's so many parallels between that and someone who's coming out of a trauma bond. Have you noticed that parallel? Do you compare that to compare someone coming out of an addiction? What has that been like for you when you're dealing with someone who's coming out of a bad relationship and someone who is also struggled with an addiction in the past?
Yeah, it's an amazing point. It's actually funny. I made a video about this not that long ago, and it actually went like super viral. Where I did like a kind of two part about, I call it the strained withdrawals, mm-hmm. and I did it. And then I made love number one. And you know, when I do videos, sometimes it's all off the top of my head. But then you know, to get the details down, so I want to be sure I'm putting precise stuff out there. I mean, especially if a lot of people are looking, someone's going to call my ass out, right? And I want it to be good info. So I went and I like actually did some research on this. I knew that you get withdrawals from love. And so I did some research and I was just like, damn, this is like more than I even thought. But in this, like in the video, so I'm like, think about a breakup. Like, think about how long that lasts. Like some people get hung up and I think there's like deeper emotional parts, but everything is neurochemical. And I think they called it the love cocktail, right? Uh-huh. Serotonin, dopamine, I believe it was, and oxytocin. All, you know, these three chemicals are very powerful. It's like serotonin happiness, dopamine instant reward, and oxytocin is love and bonding. Mm-hmm. So when you get out of a relationship, you have withdrawals from that, and it's awful. I mean, anyone who's been through a breakup, it is absolutely awful. People throw up. People get physically sick, depressed. It's almost worse than anything else. You know, like heroin, it's like, okay, yeah, I'm going to puke and shit myself for a week. But you know, after a couple of weeks, you start to adjust. Maybe you could take a medication, take some Suboxone, taper out, you know, and like, right. It's more manageable than, like, I don't know what I could give someone who's like, you know, because there's these deep emotional roots too. Not that there isn't addiction, right? It's more of like a numbing agent, but you have this like relationship with another human being. And, you know, we are social animals and so much comes back to that. So these bonds are so important. So I really think that it's a great comparison and that it could be worse than anything else. Yeah. I mean, you see people who are 3 years in and gotten over their ex.
Right.
And it, I think with that, oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, well, I think you were just going to hit the nail on the head with that. So I apologize for interrupting. You have people, the difference between someone who's coming off of heroin, I'm sure you tell them the same thing. But when I was an addictions therapist, I used to tell them your people, places, and things all have to change. If you're still going to the same areas, if you're still seeing the same people consistently, you're going to struggle, right? And it's the same thing when people are coming out of these trauma bonds. If they're still looking at their social media, if they're still, you know, still hanging out in the same spots, you're going to struggle with that for a bit. And that's why they struggle sometimes even years down the road.
Yeah, and there is something, and even in that research, they mentioned it, like, there is something even more intense about a toxic relationship. The withdrawals from a toxic relationship is far more than from a healthy, for whatever reason that is. I don't know if it's like intermittent reinforcement that you get from someone toxic, or they just know how to push your buttons. You're more vulnerable. I mean, I guess I've noticed that usually people get into toxic relationships have an underlying vulnerability to that, mm-hmm. you know, where it's like, you know, they have blinders to red flags, or they see red flags and view that as like, hey, come here, mm-hmm. Like a bull running to the red flag. And so there's that underlying trauma. And yeah, those toxic relationships are even harder to put. There's something deeply emotional, for whatever reason that is. It's the withdrawals are worse from a toxic relationship.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And when recovering from one, when we talk about, you know, the trauma, and I know you deal a lot with PTSD, what, you know, before we, you know, I never want to assume that people know what certain things are. What exactly is PTSD? A lot of times we toss that around and we assume that it's only people who have, you know, have served our country. You know, what is PTSD and what would it look like to someone who may be coming out of a bad situation, you know, a physically abusive relationship or a bad relationship, or an abusive home?
Yeah, great question. So yeah, we often do tie it to things like war because that's where the roots are. It's called shell shock. It was after World War One where people were in these absolutely hellacious conditions, you know, with mortars, shells going off around. I mean, it would literally drive people insane because all day, you know, you're having these shells go off, you know, a second away from you. Literally, if you watch videos of people coming out of World War One, especially where the conditions were even worse, you know, people for the rest of it, they'd be shaking. Like you could see videos of people walking at like just this horribly intense. And then they realize that they're on World War One. They're like, hey, we need to do something different, like rotate people out and give people rest. And, you know, and still you're, you know, in these horrific situations. And I think a good way to look at it is like living in the past, right? And with trauma, yeah, it isn't just military, right? It's going through experiences that overwhelm your natural defenses, right? We go through life and we need some barrier of protection from the world, you know, particularly emotionally. And sometimes these really horrific experiences stay with us. Now, And I compare it to physical injury, right? Think about there's all sorts of physical injuries you could have. The world is a dangerous place. Most often we heal from them. Sometimes we have a scar to show for it. Sometimes we have an injury and, you know, maybe for the rest of my life, I got to go easy on my knee. I can't be playing basketball 3 rounds a day because I have soreness, but I'm, you know, okay. It's not as bad as it was the day it happened, right? So there's healing. And then there's some injuries so bad I'm paralyzed for the rest of my life. Luckily with trauma, I think it never really gets to that point where there's just nothing you can do, but sometimes there are managed expectations there too. But I think the physical injury is the best comparison. So just like a physical injury, it's all on a spectrum. So I think, like, you know, so there's the trauma spectrum. It could be anything from shit, a kid in third grade calling me fat. Mm-hmm. Right? Okay. Well, maybe I'm not sitting there like waking up cold sweats about it, but it's a threat. It's something that affected me. It's affected my behavior. It's something, you know, I have that memory of third grade. I don't remember what I had for lunch on October 13th. This memory stood out and it affects my behavior, how I view myself in the world. And so when you look at trauma spectrum, there's just like a list of symptoms, DSM, right? Just a list of symptoms, mm-hmm. That correlate with, you know, traumatic experiences that could go all the way from something like that. And that even of itself, that one sentence could be a deep trauma that give you a complex for the rest of your life, all the way up to, say, being sexually assaulted, war, where you're having like flashbacks, because trauma, having a trauma response is living in the past. You know, this is not something bad that happened to me a while ago. This is something that is actually happening to me now and I'm feeling that. Mm-hmm. And so some people, right, like let's say I get sexually assaulted or something, and then right for the next week I'm petrified, but then okay, I adjust. You know, humans have a great way of adjusting. But, you know, some people could like fully adjust and put it behind them. Some people, you know, it's not as bad as day one, but they get stuck.
Right.
The healing process gets stuck. So there's, you know, I could list off every category of trauma symptoms, but, you know, it is things like, you know, people have dissociation, right? Like a mental protection where they leave their mind and body for a bit. It could be as much as having multiple personalities, right, in these extremes. You have things like, you know, reactivity triggers. If you want to look at a toxic relationship, oh, someone who looks like my ex, I get that fear response again, right? It's in a lot of ways, it's your body's way of protecting itself. You know, it's like if my trauma is being attacked by a tiger, and then I see a toy tiger, right, my body just, like, you know, be afraid. So unfortunately, sometimes the response becomes more problematic than the actual situation.
Right.
What are the odds I'm going to get attacked by a tiger? But now I'm like, every time I see a cat, right? And it's hard to live that way. So you have reactivity. And then you have like this whole category, which is basically like mental health, like depression, anxiety, you know, you name it, any mental health disorder, you know, that's a category. Yeah, re-experiencing. And then, you know, harmful behavior, substance abuse, you know, impulsive type of, you know, so there's all sorts of different symptoms. And when you have a traumatic experience, something that lasts with you, so emotional experience that doesn't heal, you know, you could put that on the trauma spectrum. And at some point we decided, all right, if it's over this line, it's PTSD. If it's under this line, it's not. And it's very subjective, mm-hmm. but I do think, you know, I think there's different types of trauma disorders that, and a lot of it's just for the point or for the sake of getting treatment covered by insurance and mm-hmm. a lot of that. But I think it's just a better way to look at it is just on the trauma spectrum. And at a certain point, it's PTSD. At a certain point, we don't call it that. But it's all the same.
Yeah.
It's all the same thing, really.
When one of the questions I get pretty frequently, because a lot of people who were in extremely physically abusive situations, or extreme threatening situations, once they're out of it, they deal with that shaking that you're talking about. And, you know, break that down a little bit. What is the shaking? What's that all about? Why does our body shake when we're in that PTSD situation? Is that something that someone can recover from?
Yeah, I think, and I don't know exactly why, like I can tell you like neurologically, but I mean, I think it's pretty clear that when you're in that situation, right, you're having a fear response. Your body is pumping you full of adrenaline. And you're in a panic, fight or flight. And sometimes it's just you're trembling with fear, right? Your nervous system is just fire. Your brain is overfiring. And yeah, you know, it's like if I'm afraid of the toy tiger, I mean, one of the things that we, a lot of trauma therapies, there's all these different kinds of lots. When you boil it down, there's some level of exposure. That's what we do with people with anxiety. That's like probably, you know, with fear, one of the things is using coping skills to deal with the fear, to expose yourself to those situations. Because if I'm always avoiding the toy tigers and cats and all that, I'm never going to learn to not fear them.
Right.
Because with PTSD and anxiety, right, we all have anxiety, but what makes it clinical anxiety and anxiety disorder is that the potential for harm is greater or the fear is greater than the potential for harm.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If I'm afraid of the toy tiger, what is the odds of it harming me? Just about zero. But my body is reacting as if this is dangerous.
So an irrational fear, so to speak.
You're right, but I'd maybe hesitate to label it always that way because in some ways it's very rational.
Right.
You know, like it's a rational response to what you've been through. And, you know, it's just sometimes exaggerated. But yeah, in a lot of ways, sure. Yeah, it's irrational. The proportion in itself is irrational.
Right.
You're getting after a toxic relationship, I probably should have some guards up. And I maybe should be a little afraid, but you know, not to the point where like I can never date again. And right. this is one of the things I deal with people who are vulnerable, who've been through trauma and tend to get in these relationships. I do think it's, you know better than me, but I feel like there is some, if I wouldn't say a singular personality type, but I think there's some definite characteristics, common experiences of people who tend to get in these relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Because like if you're in a healthier place, you're more self-real, you know, your mental health's in a better place. You have, and probably one of the biggest things in this, what I've been, is low self-esteem.
Yeah,
people with low self-esteem get drawn to these people. You know, you talk a lot about like narcissists, NPD. I mean, there's two elements. One is that, you know, a healthy person would run pretty quick
right.
One of these.
Mm-hmm.
However, these individuals could also be extremely, you know, and some people can get caught in that web that, you know, they get made crazy by this situation. But, you know, so people have that sensitivity, they have that vulnerability. And I noticed that, like, it's so funny, I'll work with them. I can think of a couple clients, it's like, oh, let's talk about dating. Oh, no, I can never do that. And then you look at the relationship and it's, you know, they view all men, all women as dangerous. And it's like, yo, look, like there's some pretty obvious red flags here. Like
right.
You start dating again, you know, yeah, it's going to be a risk, but you know, there are some pretty obvious pitfalls that, you know, we could run back the play and we could see, you know, that you just blatantly fumbled the ball and you ran right to the biggest linebacker when there's an opening right there.
Right.
We could avoid this situation. It's right. Not that dangerous. You
and
know,
you're right easily. because quite often, a lot of times people, it comes back down to trusting yourself. And a lot of times people feel like they lose that sense of trust in other people, but which is really a lack of trust in yourself and people feel like they have an inability to protect themselves from someone, from that potential threat. But the problem is what happens a lot of times when people start breaking it down, and a lot of times when we start working together, we look back, and when we begin to put these pieces back together, people start to realize, I did see it. I saw it and I ignored my own intuition that this was what it was. Right. And I'll take it right back to the beginning, early on in the first couple of weeks, typically first couple of months that they saw. Yeah. I was out on a date and I remember perfect example. I remember the first road rage incident with someone. And a lot of times people will describe it. And they're like, I saw this person absolutely flipping out towards someone. And the only thing that they thought was like, oh man, this is uncomfortable, right? But at least it's not directed towards me, not thinking that eventually it would be,
right? And but this uncomfortability, right? They're thinking, you know, or, you know, I remember the way they yelled at me, or I remember how they described this man or this woman, and how they and how uncomfortable they felt, or how uncomfortable they felt about a certain dynamic. But whatever that issue was, it was like times 10 once they got involved and once they got enmeshed with that person, typically, right? And they ignored their own intuition. But when we break it down, they start to realize, I'm not going to ignore that intuition anymore, right? I did know, and I ignored it because the sex was great, or because I wanted to
fit in. The bad people are always good at that.
Exactly. At least in the beginning. Then a lot of times they end up tapering off because it lacks empathy later on.
They put a lot of effort at the beginning and they got you hooked. Remember this? Exactly. I think that Eddie Murphy stand up joke where he's talking about that, or just like, it's like once you get, you know, that second, mm-hmm. that one, you get them off.
Yep.
Now they're hooked. And then,
exactly.
You know, then he starts talking about, like, you know, then you could do whatever you want. Then he's cheating. Yep. She walks in like, you cheating? Da, da, da. She's like, yep. What are you going to believe? Me or your lying eyes?
Yep.
And yep. She's like, well, okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's very true. As funny as that is, there's a lot of truth to it.
There really is. And, and you know, when you're talking about that, it made me think, like, you know, we want to believe, right? Like, we're susceptible. Even sometimes we don't know. And my parents are very, like, traditional. You know, they're not religious, conservative, whatever, but they live very, like, traditionally, tried and true. Whatever. My mom always if it's too good to be true, it is.
Mm-hmm.
I notice she's right most all the time, you know? And if something seems too good to be true, but it's like everything else lines up and it's right there in front of you and worked hard for it, maybe it's happening, you know, but if it just, you know, you gotta sometimes use that intuition, and it's easy to ignore it when the fantasy is intoxicating, right? It's like the guy, he comes up to you on the street, he's got his hair greased back, he's got his two-bit suit, he's like, you know, got that charm, he's like, hey, this amazing opportunity came up, give me $5,000, I'll turn it into $1 million. You got to trust me. This is a one-time deal, one-time opportunity. You're like, oh, I don't know. Right. It seems like it's like, no, you don't want to miss out. I'm only going to do this with five people, and you're going to regret it, right? And then he gets like, oh, okay. And then the guy goes and like he walked out of his beat-up 96 Honda Civic. No offense if you have one of those, but right, there's all these red flags. But you imagine $1 million. I think it's that same psychological principle.
It really is. Like that fear, that the FOMO, the fear of missing out, right? And a lot of times people describe that toxic relationship. I thought this was person was going to be my soulmate, which you and I know with what we do, no such thing, right? There's a lot of people that we're compatible with, right? There's not the one. Not the so one. We don't have to worry about missing out on the one. And quite often that they'll manipulate you to think that, like, yeah, you're going to miss out. If we break up, you're never going to find anyone like me. Yeah, well, thank God, right?
Well, the toxic person, they're good at selling that fantasy, the Prince Charming, right? Like, we get this shit drilled into our head when we're kids, like, hey, you know, like, this perfect ideal. And then they sell, you know, which is not true. That's not based in reality. The only reality is at the beginning of a relationship, that deliverance period, you know, the new relationship energy, refer to it, where it is, does feel like magic, but then reality sets in, and that's okay. But they sell you that bag of goods. Like, they sell you the fantasy, charm, the, you know, like, you know, you call it a lot in movies, love bind.
Yeah.
I probably learned that from TikTok, I think.
Which is really just the idealization phase. I'm even though I use some of the terms on TikTok, people who work with me know that some of the time I hate the term gaslighted, to be honest with you. I like the clinical term of crazy making. I don't like gaslighting. I'll use it because people know what it is. I don't like the term love bombing. I like idealization phase. Some things I'm just I'm still. Even though I've transitioned from, was that?
You got to meet people with where they're at.
Exactly. Exactly. But when we, when I meet with them in person, I'm like, you know what, this is the reason why I like, you know, I like crazy making over gaslighting, because it makes more sense. When you tell someone this is crazy making behavior, it makes sense. You know, all of a sudden people, you know, it starts to, you know, when you try to describe gaslighting, they're like, I don't know what that is. When you say, yeah, they were doing this thing to you called crazy making, like, oh, makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it's a much easier way to put it. And I think nowadays too, like, I mean, I'm not surprised, right, with some of these videos and how much success you've had with this topic, because, I mean, it's probably one of the most popular mental health related topics that I've seen, that people are most engaged with and most interested in, you know, narcissism, toxic relationships. And, so people use these terms, and I think, like, you know, it's our job as, you know, by virtue of having a following, you know, I kind of have a responsibility to correct people, who are maybe misinformed, who are using terms in the incorrect way, just because, you know, where it's like now that word gaslighting, you hear it all the time, but now it's just synonymous with lying.
Right.
It's like,
you hear it's not even the same thing.
It's like you're lying. You're gaslighting me by lying.
Right.
Not technically correct. It's more insidious.
Yeah, gaslighting. Absolutely.
There's more of an insidious. I think there has to be intent behind it. And, you know, than just lying.
Right.
I kind of did one video recently about, like, the different kinds of lies, right? And it's all you know, some people lie to save their ass, some people lie to get ahead, and some people lie to make you crazy.
Yeah.
The real malevolence.
Absolutely.
And I think you shouldn't conflate all those things in the same way.
Absolutely. Well, Evan, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on. We're definitely going to have to do this again. And so for those of you who are listening and you want to know more about Evan, you can follow him at evanthecounselor.com. That's the same as your TikTok handle as well, I believe. So Evan the Counselor
everywhere.
On TikTok, on Instagram, I'm assuming. I don't know if you're on. Yeah, so you're on Instagram too. So Evan the Counselor on Instagram.
All that stuff, you type that in.
So he keeps it simple like me. So you guys know I'm Matt Pfeiffer Coaching everywhere that you can find me. And same thing with him, Evan the Counselor. One last question, Bears fan or Vikings fan?
I'm going to disappoint you a little bit that I don't give a shit anymore.
Okay.
I mean, I grew up, I mean, like, never huge into football, but yeah, always like Chicago sports, Bears, okay. More baseball and Sox. Okay. And then coming here, probably like it came down to it, I'd probably go for Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, since I live here, if Minnesota loses, like, everyone would be in a bad mood. So right. I'll kind of blend in with the crowd here.
Bad mood, bad mood means good business, right? So.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. I thought of it that way. Yeah. Go Bears.
Yeah. So, well, give us some closing thoughts of things, you know, maybe a quote that you live by or, you know, something that, just closing thoughts that you might have, you know, either something you live by, something you might tell and share with people that you work with, or even if it's something based on something we talked about today.
Yeah, man, I should probably like think of an answer to that question, like for the future, you know, and like have it written down somewhere. What's your favorite quote? Like, damn it, I got to ask that again. I think, you know, in regards to this conversation in that vein, I would say that, like, you know, you're your most important investment. It's always worth, there's always a payoff in investing in yourself. And so much comes from that. And you are worth it. In these situations with toxic relationships, like I mentioned, or with self-esteem, right? If you can invest, do the work, get therapy, obviously I'm biased in that, but work through that, other things will seem to fall in place. Things take on a different meaning. And at the end of the day, it's just about quality of life. You know, we got a limited time here, and do everything you can to enjoy it. I guess that's all I got.
Absolutely. Evan, the counselor, everyone. Evan, thank you very much for joining.
And thanks for having
we'll
me.
Do it. Another honor. Yeah, it's and we'll awesome. Do it again soon. Keep your head to the sky. Spread your wings wide. Show the world you can fly. Baby, show the world you can fly. Show the world you can fly. Dream the big. Keep your head to the sky. Spread your wings wide. Show the world you can fly. Baby, show the world you can fly. Show the world you can fly. Dream big. Now they told me dream big. That's all we take with us. The things we did. Dream big. Yeah. Just dream big. That's what my nana said. Dream big, Maury told me dream big. It's all we take with us and the things we did. Dream big, yeah, just dream big. Yeah, that's what my brother said.